We're in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Chaf Hey. This is actually the fourth week learning this chapter because of its length. We are up to Pasuk Chaf Gimel, which is page 166. This Perek was discussing a very disgusting human being by the name of Naval. His name hints to that. His maneuver was disgusting. Why was he so disgusting? Because as the parak began, Shmuel, his name of the Sefer, he died. The great Navi, the great prophet, died. And everyone mourned his death. Everyone, that is, except for Naval. Naval was busy shearing his sheep. And David, who was starving to death, went to Naval, his messengers at least, begging him for some food. So otherwise he's going to starve to death. Naval not only did not give him any food, but even more than that, he insulted him. He humiliated David, basically calling him a nobody. And the idea behind this was Naval wanted to be the successor to the throne. He wanted to be the next king. That's what Naval wanted, because he was affluent, very powerful. Who is this David? So he didn't want to show any respect to him. Because of this, David felt that he was being mourned by Malchus. He was rebelling against being the upcoming king himself. And therefore, because of this, he gathers his army to attack Naval to kill him. In the meanwhile, Naval had a wife. His wife was a very great tzaddikess, as we'll learn more about, after she eventually marries David. But in the meantime, she's married to Naval. Her name was Abigail. Abigail, after hearing about this secondhand through one of the messengers who learned that this is the way that David and his messengers were treated, Abigail presented and sent forth a tremendous abundance of food, grains, bread, wine, whatever you can think of, she provided for David, appeasing him, hopefully, to the point that David would not end up killing and wiping out her husband and all the other people connected to her husband. With that said, let's continue with Pasuk Chaf Gimel. Pasuk Chaf Gimel says on the top of page 166, "Va'tera Abigail as David," that when Abigail saw David, the Tamaher, and she went quickly, "Va'tera mi'al hachamor," and she went down from upon her donkey, because they chanced upon one another by a mountain, "V'tipol l'api David al paneha v'tishtach v'aretz," and she fell down, or went down from the animal, the donkey that she was riding, and she bowed down before David. And we find this elsewhere by Yaakov and Esav. Esav, who wished to kill Yaakov with his 400 men, which is how many men, interestingly enough, David was also with at this time. Yaakov bowed down many times, 7, to Esav, and by showing his humility, it broke Esav to the point that he didn't end up killing Yaakov, ended up embracing, kissing, and parting ways. And this is also perhaps what Abigail's intentions were as well, as a form to appease David so that he would not end up killing, by showing that really you are powerful, you are the king. Don't listen to my husband who thinks you're a nobody, you are somebody I'm going to bow down to. So that's perhaps the significance of this. Pasuk Chaf Dalet. "V'tipol al raglav," and not only did she bow down, but she even fell upon his feet. "V'tomer," and she said, "Bi ani adoni ha'avon," let it be with myself the sin. That she's actually apparently casting the blame on herself, not on her husband. She's saying, let the sin fall upon me. We're going to discuss this. What did she do wrong? She did everything right. We'll discuss. But "tadaberna amascha biaznecha," let your amascha, your maidservant, speak into your ears. "Ushmaes divrei amoscha," and please listen and hear the words of your maidservant. Don't just let me speak, but also listen to the words that I'm saying. So the question is, again, what did Abigail do? Her husband definitely did something wrong, many things wrong. Not giving any food to someone who's starving, and also speaking in a very derogatory way about the great David. But Abigail, how could she say these words, "Bi ani adoni he'avon"? So we look at Rashi. Rashi tells us that she really didn't do anything wrong, and her intentions really were not to show that she did anything wrong, but she at least wanted to grab his attention. This was like what they call during cocktail parties an icebreaker. Rashi says, on the top Rashi on page 166, Mitchil Amrakath, this is how she spoke. She began her words. Kedei Shiyat Ozen Lidvareha. This way it kind of caused David's ear, so to speak, to lean in her direction. She's like, oh, what? You did something wrong? So he piqued his curiosity. And once that happened, then she started telling the truth. L'basav Amrlo Ha'emes, she said the truth. Ani Amasacha, I'm merely your maidservant. Lo Re'isi as Nari Adoni. So basically what she was saying afterwards, she was humbling herself in order to grab his attention. Not that really she did anything wrong, but she said it in order to shock him. Like, what? Who are you? What's going on? Then once she began the conversation, to be able to hopefully spare her husband's life. Now, we concluded on last week's class discussing something behind the scenes. That on the previous page, we saw something strange as far as how she was going down the mountain. It said in Pasuk Chaf, it said, Vayoredes Beseser Hahar, that she went down the secret mountain. And one explanation is maybe there's some valleys and crevices, so that's what it means. The Gemara has a different interpretation. The Gemara in Megillah on Yudalot actually says that not only are men Nevi'im, but like I often hear from the third grade girls, whatever boys can do, girls can do better. So the Gemara says that there were also seven Nevi'os. There were seven female prophetess. And who were those seven? These were the seven. We're not going to obviously go through all seven, but we'll see one is going to stick out in a second. Sarah, the famous Sarah. Miriam, Devorah, Hannah. I'm going to skip the next one and go out of order. Huldah, Esther, from the Purim story, and Abigail. Abigail, over here, this woman who was married to this Naval, she was one of the seven Nevi'os in Tanakh. And we didn't really discuss how that's proven, but we're going to see that today. And the Gemara discussed what exactly it meant, Beseser Hahar. We discussed it on the surface. It's a very strange piece of Gemara. Not going to read this inside, but the Gemara basically says that she showed him a question, asked him a question, something which is Beseser, which is generally very a private question, something which is something we wouldn't personal, exactly. Specifically with regard to Damnida. She wanted to know if she was Tameh or Tahar. That's what the Gemara says.
She touched it.
Oh, we're going to...
That's why she would say, I'm sorry.
It's
my fault.
Ah, very good. Oh, we're going to get... Exactly, we're going to get to that.
I was wondering when
Ah, very good. You're two steps ahead. You're caught on. You're too quick. Very good. Yeah, we're gonna end up going back to that. To the Pasuk which we just read, Pasuk Chavdal. But he was like, what type of question is this? A strange question. Your husband's going to die. I'm about to kill him. And here you're asking this intricate halacha question about Anida, my Tameh, my Tar, go to the mikvah, don't go to the mikvah. What are you asking such a question? The Gemara asked a stronger question. That David said, how could you be asking me a question like this now? V'chi marin dam b'layla. You can't ask me such questions of halacha questions at night. Because this is a question that I would need to actually see the actual dam to be able to decipher whether or not it's enough to be Tameh, enough to be Tar. And if we look at going to Pasuk Bet, you see on page 164, and we have to go back one page, you see that David's statement out of anger and frustration that he was so nice to Nabal and he ended up paying him bad for good, the last line on Pasuk Bet, the last line on page 164, it says that, I guarantee you, im asher mikol asher lo ad boker mashtin bekir. I'm going to basically wipe out every single thing, even the dogs, everyone, anyone, anything which any intellect will be wiped out from Naval ad boker. I guarantee you, by the time morning comes, everything's gone. So why does the pasuk say ad haboker? That implies that what time is it right now? It's the middle of the night. Must be it's the night. So he was asking, what type of question are you asking? You're asking me a question which is not supposed to be asked. It's, after all, that's a daytime question. You can't ask me such shilas at night. So then she said, of course I know. You don't think I know that? I'm not a smart woman. She said, you know what? There's another question, there's another halakhic shiloh that you cannot decipher and figure out at night either. You have no right to have killed my... I'm reading from the Gemara and Megillah. You have no right to have killed... to try to kill my husband. Or to have reached the verdict, the Gemara Din, of killing my husband. Because it was nighttime. And the Beis Din, the Jewish courts, do not work at night. Right? Even if they're overbooked and it's... criminal season or whatever. A lot of people are... a lot of crimes and a lot of cases. They do not work at night. Once... it becomes sunset, the Beis Din no longer functions. So he asked the question. He says, that doesn't make any sense. She's saying, you have no right, just like you can't answer my question about Tameh and Tahar, you also can't answer the question about Din Nefashos. However, you had no right to go and chase after my husband to kill him. And then the Gemara says like this. We're going to see a few extra lines, but all of this whole Gemara is going to explain the rest of this parak. David said back to her, Mord b'malchus. This is the Gemara which said that he responds, I don't need to try him in a regular court of law. Because if someone is Mord b'malchus, if you rebel against a king doesn't have to take you to court and then provide proper witnesses and hopefully those witnesses warned you prior to the crime. No. If someone feels that you're rebellious against the king can kill you on the spot without any questions. Finished. Boom. So I don't need to judge him. And therefore I was able to do it even at night. So your husband's dead. I'm going to kill him now. And she said, well, 1 second. A dying shall kayim. You will be the king. But stress the word will. You're not the king yet. So you're not the king yet. So you don't have the right to accept upon yourself such ruling that you are able to just kill people without a basin, without a Jewish court. You don't have the right to do such a thing. And then because of this, he responds, and this is going to be a pasuk we're going to see later on, Amr la, baruch ta'amcha ubrucha at. Blessed is your reasoning, and you are blessed. You're correct. That which you told me is correct. Asher kilisani hayom hazeh mevo badamim. Because you have prevented me from damim, from blood, killing, sounds like. Because it sounds like otherwise, David would have been wrong if Abigail didn't step in to inform him, you know, you're not the king, you're not supposed to kill him, you don't have a right to do this. So he says, you know, I'm so appreciative, and you're so blessed, I appreciate it, Abigail, because you have saved me, bidamim, bloods. The question is, what do you mean? Who was he killing? He was killing Nabal. So damim could mean, maybe he wasn't just going to kill Nabal, he's going to kill all the other people. So that's one explanation. Damim also implies to Gemara that he didn't just do one thing wrong, but apparently he was going to do something else wrong. Damim tarti mashma. El melamed, the Gemara says something bizarre, right? Which is unbelievable. This is what the Gemara says. That there was some enticing going on over here and some flirting between David and Abigail. So this is what the Gemara says. Melamed shigilta es shoka. Literally it means that Abigail lifted up part of her garment and showed her thigh to David, right? And on this, the Mefarshim are blown away, like, what do you mean? This is a tzadekes, this is a modest woman. So some say she was very far away, and there was a powerful light of ruchnis, of spirituality that he saw in the world. But certainly on the simple, you know, rated R version, it sounds like she was trying to entice David, which is part of the, how we're going to go back to her, yeah, and what she was doing perhaps was trying to spare her life and also possibly to marry him. And she was very successful in this, the Gemara says, that Omer la hishmi'ali, and David actually turned to her and said, I want to marry you. That's a gentle way of putting it. Amar lo, so she said back to him, lo, this is going to be another pasuk we're going to see soon. Lo tia zos l'cha l'pukan. I actually underlined the word zos in our packet in one of the psukim. This is, do not let this become a stumbling block to you. Zos. Don't let this become a stumbling block. Which implies, zos m'cha d'ikachriti. It must be what Abigail was alluding to, was that you should not stumble with me, but you should be rest assured there will be a future time that you will stumble. U'maninhu masa de Bathsheba. The whole story with Bathsheba, which we'll get into later on, but in Nach. But the point is that the Gemara learns out from here that this shows that she was one of the seven prophets, because she alluded by saying, do not let this be a stumbling block, which means she already knew in the futuristic time that this is what was going to happen.
Why is it necessary? I don't understand why it's necessary to put it this way. When she says to him,
yes,
why would you, when he, if he kills Nabal,
yes,
he's declaring himself king. He already took the, he is king.
Right.
She's telling him,
right,
God is making you king, you have to wait for God to make you king.
Right.
This way he's going to do with Napoleon. He takes his crown and puts it on his head.
Right.
So no, you have to wait till the time is right, and Hashem is going to...
Right. And that's... That's kind of what's happening here as well. David is saying, I want to marry you. And she's saying, I'm not available. That's what she's also saying. I'm still... It's right. It's not time yet.
But this is not the David that we know now. This is the David that we know later, but this is not the David that we know now. If this is the David that we knew then,
yes,
that they knew then, I don't think he would have been looked upon as kindly as he...
It's a question exactly what... How David, who certainly was a tzaddik, how was able to come across such a thought. But nonetheless, there's different explanations.
How old is he here?
I'm not sure. I don't know how old he is. But I don't know. But he, you know, this is what maybe they explain the Ruach HaKodesh, who was able to see that ultimately he was sometime supposed to marry this woman. So he was. He understood he was supposed to marry her. So he said, marry me. And she basically said, no. Which the idea was, one simple reason, is that you don't, it's not time yet. But some explain like this, and there's only a couple more lines of the Gemara, but since you asked the question, there's an opinion that if you're Mord B'Malchus, if in fact you rebel against the king, you're considered to be dead already. Even though we haven't yet taken the blade and chopped your head off, you are already considered to be dead. In fact, at the very, very end of this parak, which we'll maybe see next week, shows that Shaul, the king, who felt that David was Mord B'Malchus, David was married to Michal, which was the king's daughter. If you look at the last psukim in our packet, you'll see that the king takes Michal and gives her over to a different guy, right? And there's a whole discussion of who this guy was. Was he a good guy, a bad guy? But nonetheless, what is the message that Shaul is giving? That someone who's Mord B'Malchus is like you're dead already, and therefore your wife is no longer your wife because you're dead, right? So a person's dead. You can marry that person. So therefore, some explain that what David was saying is that he was Mord B'Malchus, which means that even though Nabal is not dead yet, halachically it's as though he's already dead, and therefore I'm allowed to marry you now. And her answer was similar to what she was saying before, is he's not Mord B'Malchus because you're not a king yet. So therefore you don't have the right to kill him, and therefore you also don't have the right to marry me as of this moment. So that's how some people interpret this. There's like four different answers. We won't get into them all, but nonetheless that's what the Gemara says. That's what some of the Mefarshim explain. So let me just conclude with the Gemara. The Gemara says that we learn out from this one, because you'll see some more of these psukim that the Gemara hits upon. It says the pasuk will also say later on in this parak that Abigail will say to David, "V'hoisa nefesh Adoni suru b'sorachayim," which is the famous words that we say at Hesped, that which is comes from here, that Abigail blesses David by saying that the soul of my master will be bound up in the bond of life. Ki havas miftara mine omer, which what she was saying was alluding to the fact that, you know, you are not sinning and you're tzaddik. And then it says afterwards, v'heitiv Hashem Adoni v'zachartes amosecha. She'll end up saying, please remember your maidservant. V'zachartes amosecha. So what exactly was she doing by saying, remember your maidservant? She just was trying to be enticed by David to marry her, and to marry him, and she said no. But at the end of the conversation, when they're about to part ways, we'll see the psukim say that she says, "Zachartes amosecha, please remember your maidservant." And which what she was doing was she was kind of hinting, "I'm married. I know Naval, my husband. Either you'll kill him, maybe some plague will happen. Who knows? But when my husband dies, remember me, and then we'll get married." And the Gemara ends out from here, "Hainu de'amri inchi." This is like the good old saying that people say, "Issa b'hadishusa pilcha," that a woman, while she is talking, she spins. Well, she can be weaving and spinning and spinning, but yet she can also be carrying a nice long conversation, which means women can multitask and do two things at the same time, which means that as Abigail was there trying to spare her husband's life, she also said, "Oh, by the way, the guy dies. Don't forget about me. I'm there." And so that's how the Gemara interprets this whole story. Now, with that, we can maybe get a better understanding of some of the dialogue. So, for example, as we saw, again going back to Pasuk Chav Dalid, then she says, "With Tomer, be ani Adoni Avon. I've sinned. I've done something wrong." So some explain that she enticed him more than she should have, to the point that she almost caused David to stumble and for his yetzer hara to get the best of him. And therefore, because of that, she kind of says, "You know, I'm sorry. I was overdid it." That's how some people explain. And before we move on to Pasuk of Dal, which we're going to see right now, there's a lot more to discuss in this Pasuk, is the words of the Gra. The Gra, the Vilna Gaon, says that what was she really saying? She was saying that she was hoping that she would be able to accept upon herself the wrath of David, kill me, wipe me out, and spare the rest of my family. Take all of your energy and your anger and envision that I'm the one that caused the sin, kill me, and then we'll all live a happy life. I won't, I'll be dead, but everyone else will be happy. Okay, so that's another interpretation. Whichever way you look at it, this is Abigail pleading for the life of her husband, Nabal. Probably she thought a whole lot of her husband. She probably thought he was a great man. Well, we'll see in the next pasuk that she certainly did not think much of her husband at all. Pasuk of Hey, Al na yasim Adoni es libo el ish hablial hazeh. Do not let your heart be strayed and go after the words of this man, this blial, which we saw before. Means he's a person who has no yoke, a person who's a rasha. That's what she called him. Even though before, I can't remember who it was, but someone pointed out that the Blial could have been referring to David, but certainly over here, the Blial is referring to Naval, that's clear. Al Naval, specifically my husband Nival, ki kishmo kenhu, Naval shmo. Sometimes a person lives up to their name, right? A person does exactly what their name represents. And that's my husband. It was interesting that he was named Naval, because that's exactly what he is. He's menuvel, he's disgusting, he's a repulsive human being. Unavala imo. Va'ani, so well, we're going to explain why she's bad-mouthing her husband so much. She's trying to save him, so why is she making fun of him in the same breath? Va'ani amasacha lo re'isi es nari adoni asher shalachtim. I personally don't think I'm such a bad person, so why didn't you give me food? I was asking you for food, so I know your husband. You're saying your husband is a lousy person. Okay, great. But how come you didn't give us anything? And the answer is, because I did not see you. I didn't see your messengers. I didn't know that you came. Had I known that you would have come, certainly I would have provided for you. And the proof to show that that's the case is that after I did find out about it, I sent you all these lavish gifts and all this food, the bread, the wine. So it's not my fault. I really didn't mean to do anything. I would have certainly provided for you. But my husband, unfortunately, he's not the greatest guy on the planet. But look over here to Masuda's David. The Masuda's David says over here in Pasuk Kaf Hey that when she says El Ish to this man, Ratzalomer, El Dibri Chir Pasuk, she says that don't listen to, not just to my husband, but specifically the shame that he caused you, the words of humiliation, that he even said that you're not worthy to be a king, you're a nobody. Don't really take it to heart what he says. Then the next Masuda's David says, which is underlined, Lor Isi, I was not there, basically. I didn't see you guys. Bichdei l'sakin hadavar ulefaisim, in order to be able to fix up this whole matter and to be able to appease you. If I would have been there, I would have stepped in and told my husband, you're crazy, you're wrong, give him some food. I wasn't there to appease you then, so that's why I'm here now, to appease you at this point in time. So again, the question is, why would she be speaking this way so negatively about her husband? So some people explain that David himself should be sensitive to this explanation. Because David was almost killed. David was being chased by Shaul, and he went to a city by the name of Gath. And it was not the friendliest place. That's where the Plishtim also were, the Philistines. How was he able to spare his life? After all, David killed Goliath, a powerful Philistine soldier. After all, if he would have gone into enemy territory, anyone would have killed him, turned him in, like the son of Mlad who walks down the street. And you're not going to invite him in for a cup of tea. You're going to have him arrested. So how did he get away with it? So the Pesukim say that David acted nuts. He acted crazy. So why did he act crazy? So one of the reasons we saw was that people looked at him and said, you know, how can I hold him accountable? Why should I get upset about him? He's crazy, right? So whatever he says things which are crazy. So I'm going to get upset. I'm going to be offended or insulted if someone who's nebuch insane starts saying, curses me out, says not nice things to me. He's got problems. It's not going to affect me. It's not going to mean anything to me. So perhaps this is the reason why Abigail spoke so negatively about her husband. She said, listen, my husband's manuvel. He just says the craziest things. He doesn't know what he's talking about. He says insults. Doesn't just insult you. Insults everybody. So don't take it to heart. He really didn't mean anything by it. That's just his personality. So please don't kill him. Because if it would be that he normally is a nice guy, and then all of a sudden he let you have it, okay, then he's wrong. He's a Rasha, he's more of a Malchus. He's not more of a Malchus, he's a nobody. He constantly insults everyone. So the fact that you show the exact same thing to everyone, it really doesn't mean anything. So if I'm nasty to every single person, so you shouldn't be offended by me being nasty to you, because I'm offending you, I'm just a nasty person. I offend everyone. Which is one of the things also that I learned when I was a teacher, that there was one teacher that used to love yelling. He used to yell every single day. And I used to look in the classroom and the kids didn't care. So why? Because to the kids, that was his normal way of speaking, right? He just yelled. So he yells. That's, I don't know, that he just has a higher pitch. That's ineffective. What's effective? You choose the 2-3 times in the entire year to yell. And during that point, it's like, my gosh, I can't believe it. He yelled. He's upset. He must really be upset. I better stop. I better listen. That's the same idea over here. You do the same thing all the time, like my husband, Naval. And no one listens to him. He's constantly insulting and humiliating people. So don't be offended, David, the fact that he insulted you. You know, does it to everyone. So no big deal. Okay, that's a possible interpretation of what this means. Okay. Let's move on to the next pasuk, Pasuk Chavav. Pasuk Chavav tells us, V'yata now. V'yata Adoni, and now my master, Chai Hashem, by the life of God, which is a lashon shvua, I swear, the chaynashecha in your life, asher minoacho Hashem mivo v'damim, that you are going to withhold yourself from smelling blood, v'osheya yadcha lach, and then Hashem will be a salvation upon you. Now you can naval oivecha, it shall be like naval, your enemy, that wishes to do upon my master evil. That just like Naval wishes to do terrible things, and he's your enemy, whatever happens to your enemies should happen to him as well. So what generally happens to David's enemies? They don't live a whole long time, right? And that's what Rashi says over here. You kanavo evecha, Rashi says that nisnavis baruch hakodesh. Again, this is, it's interesting. The Gemara doesn't use this as a proof that she's a prophet, prophetess, but nonetheless, it's another form of prophecy. Shlo yarech yomim, that she was saying that my husband will not be living a whole lot longer. His days, are numbers.
How long could he live?
Being a hated man.
Well,
I know a lot of people that are hated. They live in the lap of luxury. But you're right. So some explain that that's what Rashi says. Let's read the pasuk a little more critically now. Pasuk Vav again says, "Hashem Enuach Hashem Evo B'damim," that you have in the past withheld yourself from spilling blood, which means, what is this referring to? This was public knowledge that David had every possibility to kill Shaul. Shaul was in a cave. He was in En Gedi, and what did he do?
He ripped
his garments. He didn't. But just as easily, instead of ripping the garment, he could have given him a nice little zest, a little stab there, right? And that would have been it. He would have been dead. Didn't kill him. And the reason why he didn't kill him, as we mentioned in Perkei Avos a couple weeks back, was that if a person is supposed to die, if it's the decree of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that you're supposed to be killed, you're going to die. And if your decree is not to die, you're not going to die. That's a very simple concept in philosophy. Obviously, there's a lot of exceptions, and that's the basic idea. That if Hashem wants a person to die, that person's going to die. So the fact that you murder someone, we ask the question, the Medrash Shmuel asked the question, why am I responsible? What did I do wrong? Because you're supposed to die anyway. How do I know that you're supposed to die anyway? Because you're dead. If you weren't supposed to die, then I would have stabbed you. I would have shot you like 10 times. But, I would have missed you. Wouldn't have hit any vital organs. You would have lived. The fact that you died shows Hashem must have wanted you to die. So therefore, I shouldn't be held accountable. It's a real question that the Medrash Shmuel asks. And the answer is, you're right. That person was going to die anyway, but you weren't allowed to kill him. You're not allowed to be the instrument to cause this person to die. The person might have died anyway, but you're not allowed to step in to be this Russian. And that's what we said about David. That David looked at Shaul in the cave, or couldn't because it was pretty dark, but in his mind he was thinking, if I stab him, doesn't make a difference. Because if Hashem is going to have him die today, he's going to fall off a cliff, in En Gedi. That's how he'll die. And if Hashem doesn't want Shaul to die, I'll stab him, and I'll realize that in the pitch black of a cave, I was stabbing a sack or something, I didn't end up killing him. So the fact is that David showed compassion on some level by not killing Shaul, because he understood it's in Hashem's hands, really. Now, you're not allowed to be the instrument to cause someone's death. So Abigail is saying, just as, this is what the pasuk is, the critical reading of this pasuk, if we're looking at this pasuk once again, in pasuk above, the pasuk says that I swear to you in the life of Hashem, that just as you withheld yourself, mivo b'damim, from spilling the blood of Shaul, so too now, be'ata you kanaval oivecha. It should be the same thing by naval. That, what are you doing? Why didn't you kill Shaul? Because you realized that Hashem is the one who's the master of the world, and if Shaul's going to die, he's going to die on his own. If he's not going to die, so why should I do it? Why should I be the instrument? Because once I kill someone, now I'm held accountable. And now maybe someone's going to kill me. I'll be, you know, held accountable for murder. So if that's the case, Abigail brilliantly is saying the same thing with my husband, with Nabal, that you should not be the instrument to kill him. And maybe with that said, we can now understand the next part of Rashi. That Rashi says that she says to him that Shlo Yarech Yamin, that you shouldn't feel, well, I've got to kill him, I can't stand it. Every breath on this earth, it just drives me mad that he's such a terrible person. Don't worry about it. He's going to die soon anyway. He's not going to have a long life. So don't be the one to kill him. He's going to die soon anyway. So that's a possible way of the reading of the Pesukim. But again, the idea is Abigail is trying to somehow show and tell David, don't touch my husband. Don't touch Nabal. Pasuk Chav Zayin. V'yata now habracha hazos, this blessing, asher hevi shivchotecho ladoni, that your servants are received. And it's bracha, what do you mean? She gave a bracha, she didn't give any blessings. What blessing did she say? So the Masudas Sion says, matana, it's a gift, right? It's also, you can possibly say, it's food, and what do you say in food? Hopefully, I'm sure David knew his brachos. So I gave your servant food. It's interesting. Apparently David was also hungry, he probably could have eaten something, but she doesn't say that. She says, I gave to your servant. We'll see why in a second. V'nitna l'anarim, give it to your lads, hamis, halchim baragli adoni, the ones who are traveling with my master, with you, David. I gave foods and provided all the provisions for these people. Okay, so if we look, the Masudas David says this, but it's also actually, if you look on page 167, it says it in the English, I think. I should have underlined it. Yeah. 27, it says, tactfully, Abigail said that the food should go for David's attendants, although David himself surely needed it as well. And as soon as David echoes these words, even though I'm not sure why it doesn't say that in the left in the English, but as soon as David says, V'nasna mipnei ha-kavod lo'amr v'nasna lo'chad, because of honor, because this is a great man. To say, I gave you a little slice of bread. You know, that's embarrassing. Well, you know, David's starving, so you say, I'm giving it to you, and they'll give it to him. But for her to say, I gave you, it makes him feel like he's a, you know, he's a nobody. He has nothing. He's a.
Does he know that she did it? She doesn't go with him now, and she goes by herself. She meets him on the other side.
Right.
So they are on one side, David is on the other side, so David doesn't know that she did it.
Right.
Yet.
Unless you want to say the messengers inform.
He's sneaking at night. He's not sneaking at night. The messengers are going to run chase him. Oh, we got food.
That's how it's also, it implies as though he didn't receive it yet,
he
or he just.
Yet, because he is right. On his way to kill Nabal because right. He's angry.
Right. Because it.
He doesn't know yet.
So some say that the. That was, as we mentioned last week, that Abigail and David kind of just bumped into one another. You know, so it's almost like Abigail wasn't even expecting to catch in this fast. Because she set the food ahead of her. So she was hoping, so maybe she went in a different route, thinking I'm probably not going to catch him, but
so
he ended up going
to. Where is she going?
What?
Where is she going?
She.
It's at night.
So maybe she took a wrong turn, or some may explain that because all the food was heavy, very heavy, so even if you go ahead, you can easily pass them. So maybe she went so quick, as we're going to see, if she didn't want to spare her husband's life, she went ahead of it, even though she sent it first. So, but either way, this is what she's saying. She's saying, I did provide, I'm telling you that the food that you have received or you're going to receive, it was from me. And the reason is because we feel bad about what we did. We did something wrong. Pasuk Ches. Sa'na l'pesha mosecha. Sa, what does that word mean? Masudas Sion helps me out a little bit and says, Sa is inyan mechila. Please forgive the sins of your maidservant. Again, what did she do wrong? So if you want to, again, derive from the Gemara that she was a little bit over the top, enticing him. Of course, she was a tzaddikah, so you have to be careful speaking that way about her. But nonetheless, ki aso yasa Hashem ladoni bayis neman ki milchamas Hashem ladoni nilcham v'ra'lo tim soy b'cham yomecha. So she said, "Please forgive me. Please forgive me. Hashem will make for David a bayis neman. It's an enduring house. We'll see what a bayis neman, an eternal house, referring to his malchus." That he'll reign for eternity. Because the wars that you fight are godlike, with spirituality connected to ruchnias. We're going to see that there's actually musar, there's tochacha, there's rebuke in those words. And no evil should, or badness or blame should be found in you in all of your days. Which the idea again, what she's saying is, if you would kill Naval, then there will be Ra, which will be found in your days. This will be a skeleton in your closet after you've accepted this position of power, being this politician, being a king. People are going to look back and say, "What is this guy? He's a hothead. He murdered people. He didn't deserve to be killed, and he killed him." V'ra'lo timatze b'chal miyamecha. Do not allow that there should be any evil to be found among you. Let's look in Rashi. Rashi says in Pasuk Chaf Ches, "Ki asa yasa Hashem ladoni bayis neman." We wish the Chasam Mekala bayis neman. What is a bayis neman? Again, bayis neman is translated as an enduring house. Right, an enduring house. So Rashi says a little bit different. Liyos melech al Yisrael, to be a king over the Jewish people. Lefichach, therefore, since you are going to be a king, and you're going to be in the limelight, people are going to be watching, the paparazzi are going to be chasing after you, watching your every move, no matter what you do. Do not allow there to be found anything bad by you. They're going to be digging all the dirt, they're trying to find something good and juicy to put in all the tabloids. People are going to start speaking negatively, saying, "Yeah, this guy maybe doesn't deserve to be the king. You know, why did we appoint David as the king? He's a murderer, right? Why would we allow him to be the king?" So don't allow anyone to have the opportunity to be able to speak negatively about you as in such a way. So that's how the Rashi interprets it. We look over here in the Mesudas David. The Mesudas David says as follows on Pasuk Chaf Ches. Mesudas David says, when it says, "Ki melchamas Hashem," that you're engaged in godlike wars, "Kol melach matecha heim melchamas Hashem." All the wars that you're involved in are all, you're doing the right thing. You fight. I know you've killed many people. You're a warrior. You killed a lot of Pelishtim. But they were all godlike wars. You had the right, halakhically, to do them. Lasos nekama b'kachava mazalos, to wage war and avenge those people who are b'kachavim, idol worshippers. Avdi Kacham could also refer to non-Jews, but Avdi Kacham Mazalos refers to specifically the Pelishtim and the people that wish to do harm against the Jewish people. So you protected the Jewish people. You were that's okay. That war, that's all right. Which is fine, right? It's your job. You're allowed to take the same knife and stab a person, and that's considered to be war, and you're allowed to do that. But there's also certain, that same knife, killing someone, could be considered murder. And that could be considered wrong. That it's no longer considered to be an act, a godlike act. Says the Mesudas David, remember that Shaul wiped out the city of Nov Ir HaKohanim. 85 great Kohanim were on the high level of potentially becoming a Kohen Gadol. He killed them because he felt that somehow they were protecting you and helping you, giving you things, giving you food, gave you bread, gave you a sword. So he killed Jews. And you think Shaul's such a great guy, he's chasing after you. He's not doing the right thing. And you probably don't think very highly of Shaul because he's trying to kill you. He's killing you, trying to kill me. I'm a Jew. What's he doing? You're no better. This is what she's saying. You're no better because you're trying to kill my husband. You're trying to kill another Jew. So why would you be allowed to do so? You're only supposed to be involved in Milchamos Hashem, and by fighting and trying to kill and wipe out my husband and all of his people, that's something which would end up tarnishing your career and your reputation. Fine. Let's move on to Pasuk Chavtes. See a couple more pasukim. We'll have to stop. V'yakum Adam. This is an unbelievable word. V'yakum Adam lirdafecha. That there was a man that was getting up to pursue you, namely Shaul. L'vakish es nashecha. He had your soul. He wanted to kill you. V'haisa nefesh adoni saru. And obviously you were spared. Hashem was helping you from Shaul killing you. V'haisa nefesh adoni saru b'sarachayim. That your soul will be bound, was bound up in the bound of life. It should be Hashem Elokecha v'es nefesh ha'ivecha with Hashem. However, v'es nefesh ha'ivecha with regard to your enemies, yikalenu b'soch kaf hakola. In contrast, when it comes to your enemies, their souls will be as one shoots a stone from a slingshot. They'll be completely destroyed and thrown away. Thrown to the wayside. What? What was that?
Goliath with a stone.
Ah, very good. Right. So, there is certainly a connection that she was alluding to. When are you allowed
remember,
to...
Remember? Right. Remember what you did?
Right. But what? Not necessarily that he did something so bad then,
no,
but...
No, then it was meant, he was meant to kill.
Right.
It was meant to kill.
So at that moment, right, when
Hashem
he's...
Hashem guided that stone.
Beautiful.
But he protected his people.
Exactly. Very good. So that's the time in which a person is allowed to do such a thing. However, just to take your avenge against my husband, that's not something which you're allowed to do. We'll go to the Masudas, the Radak over here in Pasuk Chavtes. The Radak says as follows. V'yakum Adam. What do you mean? Who's the Adam over here? Who's the person? Shaul. Can you imagine calling a king? Hey, Joe over there. That's what she did. She called Shaul, the king, an Adam. The Karasu Adam lo melech derech bezayom. Klamer ki ein lo tekum lefenech. That he was just a nobody, just a regular guy, because he had no ability to hold up. He couldn't touch you. He couldn't stand, he couldn't do anything against you. And therefore he, although was a king, a powerful king, could do whatever he wants, he couldn't do anything. He had no power just like an Adam, just like a common man. Mesudas David over here says in Pasuk Chavtes, "V'yakum Adam Ratzalamar, Am Shekam Shaul Lirdafecha." This nation that stood up against you with Shaul, "V'yochli Yosahargu B'mara." But you, what were you able to do? This is again what it's alluding to. You were able to go, even though he was trying to kill you. You could have killed him, B'mara, in the cave. You didn't stretch out your hand. You did not touch him. You did not kill him. You never did anything which was bad in your days. Because of this, because you did not take the law into your own hands ever, and you did not murder someone, you did not kill someone who was not your right to do so, that your soul be bound up to the bond of life eternally in spirituality. Pasuk Lam it says, "V'ha'ya kiyasa Hashem Adoni kichol ashadiber es hatova lecha v'sibcha nagid al Yisrael." And she gives this bracha that it should be that when Hashem does for my master, for you, David, it should be done kichol ashadiber es hatova lecha, everything which is good should occur to you, v'sivchol nagid al Yisrael, then you should be considered to be the leader among the Jewish people, which means you will eventually become the king. Let's see one more pasuk Lamed Aleph, because this is going to connect to what we started off with. Pasuk Lamed Aleph on page 168. V'lo siyeh zos lecha lepuka. Do not allow this to be lepuka. The Mesudas Sion says, afu inyan michshol, to also stumbling block, michshol, type of a stumbling block. Do not let this be a stumbling block. Ladoni to my master, v'lishloch dam chinam, and to spill innocent blood. Lo yishia Hashem lo. Why is it innocent blood? Because he's innocent until proven guilty. You haven't put him through a regular basin, through a regular court of law. Maybe if you would have taken him to a basin, maybe he wouldn't be chayav misa. Maybe he would deserve to die. But at this point, he doesn't deserve to die. So you have no right to spill innocent blood. Lo yishia adoni Lo v'heitiv Hashem Adoni v'secharta es amosecha. It says that may Hashem act kind and good to my master, to David. And then she concludes by saying v'secharta es amosecha. Please remember your maidservant. Which she's saying, I know that he's going to die. Don't kill him yourself. Right? Do not allow this man's blood to be spilled, that you should have his blood on your hands. V'secharta es amosecha. But remember, when he does die, remember me, and we'll get married.
It's very interesting because she takes away his reason. She already took away the reason why he's angry with Nabal.
What? Why?
No, because the people have the food.
Right. Right.
So she renders him helpless.
But he also insulted her. He also insulted him.
Oh yeah, but
that's why she said she's
in.
He's in.
He's in trouble. For an insult.
Right.
They do, though. But
what?
Which shows
the authenticity of the texts, because it doesn't show that all these great people are, it's just everything they do is perfect. Right, but that when you show their flaws, it shows their greatness. It shows the greatness
and
is true, that the rest of the text and the storyline is not just made up. Because if it was made up, why would we want to show anything negative about these great people that we speak so highly of? Well, that's the whole idea. That when we show, by showing the truth, everything, the whole picture, it gives the reality, and it's completely legitimate. Let's just conclude with this last paragraph on 169, which we'll read, then we'll stop. Which is what we talked about. It says, on page 169, and may you then remember your maidservant, when you become king, remember that I saved you from spilling innocent blood. That's what the Radak says, which we didn't read inside. However, the Gemara in Megillah, which is the sages interpret this as a little suggestion of marriage, should Naval die, Zacharta Samasecha. Stop here.